Hello, everyone. Welcome to Catalog and Cocktails. It's your honest, no BS, non-salesy conversation with Enterprise Data Management. I'm Tim Gasper, Chief Customer Officer and a data nerd at Data.World and co-host Juan Cicada. Hey, Juan.
Hey, everybody. I'm Juan Cicada, Principal Scientist at Data.World. And as always, it is Wednesday, middle of the week. Today, we're doing it a little bit early because we're here live from Gartner right now.
Gartner Data Analytics Conference.
And super excited to have Chris Hodges, who is the Senior Director of Data Governance at Norwegian Cruise Line. And we're going to be talking about our takeaways today. How are you doing, Chris?
Good. Thanks for the invite. This is it's always fun to listen to it. Now I have to be a part of it. So let's see. I'm hoping to be as engaging as all the other guests you've had. Oh,
welcome to the alumni group of Catalog Cocktails guests. Yeah. So before kicking off, it's still early. What are we drinking? What are we toasting for?
I've got some tasty coffee. I don't know. What are you drinking?
I'm sticking with water for now.
It's been an intense couple of days for sure. But yeah. Hey, let's go toast it. I love that we get able to do this show live with folks at a conference. And
cheers.
Stuff. So cheers. For everybody on there. All right. There's so much to cover.
I know.
Let's hit the ground running. So what are your honest, no BS takeaways from these last couple of days here at Gartner?
You know, perhaps the thing that for me was the most intriguing is that there were a number of sessions I had a chance to listen in on. AI was very big, data mesh was very big. Mm-hmm. But the underlying theme in almost every session I sat in on, and perhaps it was what I picked, it was the importance of metadata management. I was very surprised by it. But I think that what kind of really was unique is that I didn't pick the keynote. The keynote is the keynote. And in the keynote, there was such an emphasis about the success of all of these initiatives that companies really want to do and the importance of making sure that metadata management is critical for those success stories that they're trying to do. And it was as though they were saying, if you haven't gotten that step right, these other ones are you're going to struggle. So it was almost like there was their no BS talk. Mm-hmm. It was like, yeah, these things are great, but you got to get metadata management right first.
Yeah. What was your perception on why metadata management was such a common thread? Like why does everything kind of come back to that? Because I agree with you, and I'm kind of curious, what was your interpretation of like why that's the thread?
I think that ultimately it is about people still understanding what their data is, increasing that data literacy that you hear about quite a bit. People are drowning in data, but they don't even know what that data is. When it comes to some of the AI projects, we've had a chance to experiment a little bit. It teaches us a little bit more about our data that we actually should know more about. And we don't do that until you start playing and start doing some of these more advanced, let's call it architectures or efforts.
So is it because we've been talking about metadata for so long, but I always argue that it's like treated as that second class citizen. It's not data architectures and all this stuff like that's a big thing. And is it like finally that time has come that people are realizing this is what I need to be focusing on?
I would say yes. And I think that the reason that those topics were so prevalent is they're sexy. Mm-hmm. It's really cool. Let's do this. You start doing it. You're like, well, why are we failing? And then you start seeing the theme come out. And it's just like, oh, we probably should have done that foundational step first. Mm-hmm. And then we could have gotten further along. So what you're hearing, at least what I'm hearing a lot, is companies that are trying that, they're taking the step back and saying, okay, we can see what this power of this new path can be, but we have to get that basic step right. Mm-hmm. So I'm hearing a lot of people kind of going back to that saying, okay, let's get that step right. So for those that haven't done it yet, it's almost like they're getting a chance that if they do that metadata management discipline right, and then they go do that project, they're gonna be like, this was so easy, I don't understand it. Mm-hmm. But that's because they did that foundational step.
I think it's very interesting that especially now with like AI projects and I know we're doing some interesting stuff too. We should talk about that in a little bit. It brings a very visible feedback loop around any kind of problems around data quality, around data understanding, right? I feel like we've had these problems for a long time. You mentioned data literacy, right? And people are like, oh, I can't find data. I can't understand the data. But maybe it was a little fuzzier, right? In terms of like, oh, what does that mean? Like, oh, I don't know, I couldn't find the dashboard fast enough, whatever it is, right? But now with AI, literally the AI is hallucinating and it doesn't understand because you don't have the data quality. You don't have the data understanding, the data documentation. Like, is this a good thing that now it's like bringing more visibility and more of a feedback loop around the problems around our data?
Are people like, now they're crashing to the wall and like, well, you need to feel some pain.
Yeah, I do. I believe that that's the case. I think that the scenario where Look, the reality is it's very challenging for anyone to be able to say that you start with a company and that's the company you retire. So the practical reality is you're going to have turnover. And as different people come and go within the organization, you use different terms, you use different words, you call the content slightly different. So AI is expecting you to have discipline. It's expecting you to have everything is called the same. And then when you're trying to use it, AI is coming back with, I'm a little confused because there's five different things here that could be a customer.
Yeah.
Like, which one am I listening to? Which is, ironically enough, the same problem the business has.
Yep.
I like this. This AI expects discipline. Mm-hmm. And I think I would unpack that, and I would say for let's call it consumer type of applications, you can be fuzzier. It's fine. But I think when it comes to the enterprise world, you need to have that accuracy. You need to be able to say, oh, this is the answer for these reasons, because regardless of the AI, this is what everybody's expecting, right? Executives all the way down, up and down, they're saying, if I'm going to ask a question, I want to have an answer that I can go trust, and somebody can go and explain that answer. And part of the explanation is that you know that there's a person, and that person, and then there's accountability around it. So it's all about that discipline. I really like this. This is an important thing, thinking about it when it comes to the enterprise.
Because the way I view it, right, is that the human has the ability to do the interpretation. The AI is going to try to do the interpretation as best as it can, but it's going to run into those challenging, let's call it, walls that it's going to hit, right? I mean, I dare say that if you have the same organization running an experiment, have them go do that AI experiment with a curated data set that you know is good, or just let it go in the wild. And do you get the same results, or do you have a different opinion of AI now? It's like, look.
Is that something that you're seeing people talking about, thinking like, let's actually do experiments. All right, let's go sit down and do the foundations, mm-hmm. and let's go have fun. Do right. the cool thing. And see what happens.
Yeah, just see what comes out.
Are you seeing people doing this?
Not seeing them do it. I'm hearing them talk about it, right? In the evenings when we're not drinking water and some people start saying, hey, what is it that you really do? You do data governance. Like, wow, you know, if we could get some structured data, I think that we could really do some neat things. And you hear that quite a bit, right? And not structured data in the concept how we think of structured and unstructured data, but just I think a better choice of words is curated data. It's like, you know that this is a safe walled garden. You know that data is good. You run your things against that. I almost make it akin to a joke that I always say is like, when vendors are out there selling their products and you see their products look amazing. And my response is, you have a curated data set and a demo script, and that thing's going to look like the best thing you've ever had. Now grab that same product and use your data set that's got no rules. Everything's wrong. And what does that product look like? And a lot of people tell you, it's like, yeah, that product's horrible. It's like, no, the product's fine. The problem is your data. Like, you got to get that right.
I think that's a big insight, is that a lot of folks want to do some really innovative stuff around, whether it's self-service analytics or around AI. And ultimately, if you don't have that curated data, if you don't have that foundation, you're going to run into a lot of problems. So, I mean, it's probably a good time right now to be in governance or data enablement or whatever term you want to use, right? Like, because now the focus is higher than ever on it. So what's your feeling on that?
I think it really goes to varying degrees of success. Mm-hmm. If you've had that discipline, it's great. I think it also, honestly, it opens up the door for the constant struggle that you hear about, which is, partner with the business. IT, you have to partner with the business, you know, reach across and work together, because now it's truly a scenario. It's like, okay, the investments can be there, the efficiencies can be there, but if you can't figure out a way to get all of those groups to work together hand in hand and land on, what do we call this? How do we use it? Where do we get it from? And have that consensus. And honestly, like, a lot of these investments are going to fall short, and you know, that hype circle is going to struggle like it usually does. So I think it really truly opens up that door to further reinforce the importance of that partnership.
One of the things that we were doing before we got live here was going through the oldest sessions at Gartner and seeing what they were tagged with, the topics. So not a surprise, the number one is AI with 79 things. So there's like 79 sessions that had tagged or whatever with AI.
That's a lot of sessions.
Number two, I was actually surprised that it's the data analytics governance. So it's interesting. So people like
67, almost as many as AI.
And then after that, you have the strategy, which is 55. Then sessions about for CDAO is 52. Analytics and BI had 43 sessions. Leadership 40. data architecture 31. So this is kind of, we're seeing this flip of like the core of data management architecture, like that is, I mean, we're talking about it, but there's more important things we need to be talking about. Governance, I mean, AI, obviously, so that's a hot topic, but governance is the one that's supporting. Interesting enough, data quality 21, data literacy 11, MDM 13, and the one that had the least was real time and streaming with 3
sessions. Yep.
So, listeners, you can interpret that however you want, but
I think it kind of goes back to, you've had years of those topics being the high volume topics, at least I believe that that's how the number would have played out. And now it's getting to a point where people are sitting there throwing their hands up and saying, we can't get this to work. Like, it sounds cool, but how do you get it to work? And so I think that the focus has shifted, saying, okay, let's help people walk through what that would look like.
Yeah. It's no longer just a conversation about, you know, data lake architecture or something like that, right? That's just a means, right? And kind of a given now. It's really, hey, I want to get to AI, 79 sessions, and the only way I can do it is with effective governance, 67 sessions, right?
So let's get in a little bit deeper. Like, what did you see in sessions about what should you be doing? How should you be doing with metadata?
So on the metadata side, you know, it kind of goes back to the question or the comment I made earlier, which is it really is boiling down to their emphasis is that it's on the partnership. You have to be able to get these, you know, cross-functional, if you're multi-subsidiary or cross-branded, like, get everybody together and let's start talking through. And again, you know, the basics, don't boil the ocean, don't go after everything, but pick things that make sense, right? Usually the easiest path forward is, the easy first step is pick a report, pick a dashboard, pick something that everybody knows, like, that's super important, and just define everything on there. And then over time, just kind of let that grow out a little bit more. I saw that as a bit of a theme where they're really trying to kind of get more engagement from everybody. And it's also quite a bit about the prototyping in terms of, hey, try this, experiment with this, play with this. What do you think about it? And I think that the other thing that was also rather interesting that they were mentioning is that there's been, I guess, conversations where it's like, hey, do I do A or do I do B? Or should I do C? Particularly when it came to the data architecture, it's like people were sitting there saying, it's like, look, do I do data fabric? Do I do data mesh? Do I do a lake house? And what they were trying to say is, no, it's actually, it all works in a way that you should be able to understand the complementary capabilities of each, and it, you know how far you carry it, and then you take it to the next step using the other architecture. And I think that that's an interesting path in terms of how people are looking at it, because most people would debate and say, no, I'm doing this or I'm doing that. They don't look and say, we're going to apply all of it. Because now when you're applying all of it, it brings in the question, it's like, do I have the architects? Do I have the skills and the engineers to manage it? Do I even have the engagement from the business in order to make that model work?
Yeah.
The bigger picture.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I I've been talking with one of the analysts here, was on the social side. So I love to chat with Mark Beyer all the time. And we've been talking about how that social aspect of missing. I mean, you're talking about partnerships, right?
Partnering, it's like,
how do we go find those partnerships and who's doing all those types of work? And so we started the discussion saying, look, what we need is more of a social data engineering. And that was on Monday. We were talking about that term, and then people were like, you actually said it too. I was like, well, that kind of seems like social engineering, like hacking. Like,
And hey, listeners, what do you think of the phrase social data engineering?
Yeah.
You like it? You don't like it? Let us know.
Well, but what came out was, Mark was also sharing with other people, and somebody came up with, mentioned the same thing.
Yeah.
He said, but what you're really trying to do is collaboration. Mm-hmm. So it's really like collaborative data engineering you would do. Mm-hmm. And that's the one that stuck with me. I like this. Now, but at the end of the day, it's, you have all this metadata, all this knowledge that's embedded not only in the systems and stuff, but it's also in people's heads. And this is it, so we need to create catalogers or whatever, extractors of metadata from the workers' heads. And I think going back to the earlier point that you said is like, people are now, they come and go to organizations, they have all their own know-hows, the terminology, their processes, how they do things. Like, that is something that I feel that is a step in figuring out how to go partner. And I think we need to have those folks who can do that role of that collaborative data engineering to be able to build more bridges across different communities and saying, oh, well, by the way, I'm not going to go talk to everybody. I also need to go figure out a focus. And like, here's this report that we're trying to go understand. Like, let's figure out that entire thread that goes from top to bottom. And there's a bunch of people I need to go talk to figure it out and understand. So that was the conversations I was having with folks here. I don't know. How does that connect with what you've been seeing?
So two quick points that you really made me think about, right? So one is if we go back, you know, 10, 15 years, a super popular topic used to be the concept of knowledge management in an organization. Mm-hmm. Not, you know, metadata management, it was just basic knowledge management. Because what you said, it's like, how do we do this process? What's the most efficient way to do the process? No technology involved. It's just, how do you do this particular process and get it through? And it was just the basic concept of knowledge management and how do you transfer it? And how do you make sure that when you're getting new folks in, because either they get promoted or they go to another organization, the next person has to know how to do it as efficiently, hopefully not dropping that productivity capability, right? So that topic's actually been around for a while.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what you were saying earlier. I'm not sure if everyone's taking it seriously. And now people are realizing it's like, well, maybe we have to take it seriously.
Yeah.
Juan, you made a very interesting comment about, you know, let's figure out about this report, this dashboard. Last night, having a conversation over dinner, and someone shared the fact that they had read the post on a thread out there that said this new person went into the organization and they were asked to go ahead and review some of the contents as part of their ramp up. And what they did is they looked at a report that had been produced for the better part of 2.5 years. And they realized that the person that had developed the report had done the join incorrectly and was providing information that was incorrect to the organization for the better part of 2.5 years, but everybody was using it as gospel. And the person's post was, do I tell them that it's wrong or do I fix it and not say it? So now this person is inheriting the issue and it's like, how do they navigate that scenario?
This is fascinating because this is what I call the politics of knowledge.
Yeah.
And what do you do?
What do you do?
Right? You can have to go do the pros and so, I mean, okay, yeah. Let's play this out. What do you do?
No, me personally, I would just document and demonstrate why I think that number is wrong. Show it, because maybe I got it wrong. Maybe that join, they already figured out that the correct join would have produced the incorrect numbers. But what this person's position was, being again new, but being technically, they already told him that he was technically stronger than the prior person there. Mm-hmm. And so that was the conversation at dinner last night is, what do? Do you sit there and say it? And then the debate became, it's like, well, what makes you think that that person's right? So now you're questioning that person's technical capability, even though he was told you're stronger than the last person that was here. So
when it comes to politics, and I think we had this conversation last week too, about something about politics, and it's like, wait.
Around ownership, right?
Yeah, when it comes to like, this is not something like, oh, I'm going to come in and tell you that you guys are all wrong. Like, that's not, you're going to make enemies, and especially if you're new. So I think part of it is understanding the landscape of your organization, understanding your peers. You need to make friends. You need to start socializing this stuff. So I think in a situation like this, one approach is let's start socializing with the people right next to you. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, so I'm looking at this and what do you think about that? And see if other people catch it too or not, right? Because then they may give you more context that you missed and you're like, okay, no, this is why it's correct there. So I think that socializing little by little, but here's the thing, that if I zoom out and the honest no BS thing is like, that was wrong, but so what? The business was still functioning, right? Well, I mean, they're not on the news because something bad happened, whatever. So what? And I think we need to figure out the so what.
Right.
And this is the important case for metadata and for knowledge management and so forth, is saying, look, the so what is we left so much money on the table, right? This is where we need to go to push, because otherwise people are like, it's directionally correct, it's fine.
That's exactly the term, right? And that's where the comfort level, I think, comes in, is that most organizations will sit there and say, look, if it's directionally correct, I'm okay with it. I mean, unless I'm a publicly reporting organization, I have to get it down to the penny, right? Then for most people, for their day-to-day decisions, is look, directionally, as long as that's an accurate enough number, we can move forward.
No. So yeah, this is what we need to go figure out.
Yeah, and knowing that downstream usage is pretty important here to help inform some of the politics, right? Like if you know that that number was being reported in the annual stock report, then you're going to handle it in a different way than, you know, if it's a casual dashboard that occasionally the executives like to look at once a quarter, but it's non-critical. They're just looking for directional trends.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you just update it and move on. So it's interesting to navigate the politics around all of this. And a lot of that has to do with how are we using it and who's using it.
Yeah. I mean, continuing on this, what you realize is that if people are, they find issues, they think it's an issue. Like, oh, data quality is a big issue. Like, yeah, that's an issue. But how is that really impacting across the lines of different businesses? And people are like, it's not a big deal for me. I understand it's a problem. I have bigger problems I need to go deal with.
Yep.
So I think that's, again, that partnership is super important to understand. Okay, great. I'm done with this. I'm going to put it aside. I'll put it and create a log about it. And then I'll go to the next problem we go to. So I think that's the type of politics we need to figure out. Sorry.
Yeah.
All right. What else on, I know you were talking about the data mesh, data fabric. Yeah. And that was a very popular presentation.
Yeah. That presentation, I didn't think it was going to be as big of a deal. It was an enormous deal. The room held 700 people. The room was full and standing room only along the walls. Like, everybody wanted to listen in on the session. So it was perhaps, other than the keynote, I would have to say the busiest session I saw, the most amount of people in a session at all. It was that one. So it's interesting. I think that people are trying to gravitate to get a better understanding. I'm not sure how many of them are doing it, or what I think may have very well happened is that when they put the architecture up there, I think people were trying to kind of say, hey, I resonate with that because I actually have two parts of that or six parts of that, because they would sit there and say, it's like, look, there's seven components in order for this to work. Mm-hmm. And I think that what was an interesting thing that they try to make the audience at large feel a little bit more comfortable is, of the seven components that you need in the architecture, three are very mature in the partner space. The other four, like, they're either brand new or they're trying to get a level of maturity. So you have to be somewhat selective in terms of what you think your success is going to look like and how that kind of plays out. So it was interesting to hear that, almost to kind of remove a little bit of the pressure to say, it's okay, go experiment. And so set your expectations correctly when you're trying to promote or advocate for this in an organization.
Right. So another theme here is a lot of experiment, like go off and experiment prototypes. Just
try it
out. I think one discussion, the session I was to, is the main thing about data mesh is the data products. So I think that is now the thought of a data product, I think I would consider is mainstream. And I think actually people have gone over like, oh, what is it? The definitions have stopped being pedantic about it, which I think is a good thing. We'll just get shit done and provide business value. But I think the notion of the data product is and having that separation of, oh, you're going to go, how you, what is the infrastructure you're doing to create that? And then you have like that delivery mechanism with the data product. And I think that's something that I'm starting to go see more and more now, that people are getting that mindset right there. I don't know.
They are. The biggest pushback that I would consistently hear after the session, like just chatting with different peers, is they're saying, okay, so now I have to divide up my existing data engineering team out to different places, or we have to bring in more resources. And then the second biggest concern that I heard was, you're never going to ultimately be in a full data mesh strategy. So if you're still keeping your central data warehousing concept and you're applying the data mesh strategy, you're having parallel teams. So you actually increased the headcount that you needed to support the data. And I think that that's where, you know, I'm not sure exactly how you walk that line and provide the efficiency and provide the data products, right, and allow the businesses to kind of get what they need without understanding that there's an incurred cost of that style of agility.
Right? This is interesting because at the end of the day, this is definitely not a technology problem. It's more it's truly just the people and process, and specifically it's like, how do I get all these people? I got to pay for them, right? So it's at work.
Or you have to enlist them somehow, right?
Yeah.
If you're borrowing or collaborating with people across the organization.
Well, and it was interesting because one of the topics that they referenced in that is that the struggle that they've already identified is that when you start working across the organization, the technical acumen of the other parts of the organization typically are not as strong as what you hold in IT. Okay, that makes sense. So are we saying that you want to create a federated IT department? Are you saying that, to your point, you're going to enlist and recruit and now you work for me, but it's at your cost center, but you, we teach you the practices of how to do it. Like, how does that, again, how does that social construct start to work in an organization? And if they're trying to shoot for efficiency, does that efficiency, what is the incurred cost to get it? Mm-hmm. Do you have the palate for it? Like, are you willing to pay for that? I think that is, you know, the consistent chat I kept hearing. I think in the next couple of years, we'll see how many companies are more willing to go ahead and commit to that.
Are people just, so people are more talking about it?
They're talking about it for sure.
So, any people actually having an answer is like, the cost of efficiency was X for us.
Exactly. And here's what I got out of it.
And here's, and I got Y, and Y was this little bit, or big, way big, I don't know.
Marginally or exponentially.
Yeah.
What was it? So I think that that's what still stands to kind of be determined. I think that they're not entirely certain. In fact, if you even have the opportunity to speak with some of the Gartner analysts, they will sit there and share with you. It's like, look, there's really nobody that's 100% full data mesh and it's working perfectly. Like, they're just not there either. So they'll tell you that, right? So in all fairness and from a full disclosure perspective, it's like, look, people are absolutely, call it experimenting, call it looking at it, call it researching it, put whatever adjective you want, but it's definitely being discussed a lot more than I would have expected.
Okay. All right. What other main themes have we seen?
So the only other main theme, and granted, only because of my role, it was a bit biased for me. I was trying to understand a little bit more where people are going with master data management, trying to understand it's the typical, do you buy it off the shelf or do you build it? What are the challenges? How many of the domains do you go into? Do you go into your traditional domains for master data management? Do you create a new concept of the domain or how it applies to your business world? But the interesting thing, even in the master data management side, when I was listening to those chats, is guess what was another theme that was in that chat?
Metadata.
Metadata management, right? So they go back to the same thing. It's as though, if we think about that concept of the language, we're all speaking, right? We're speaking in English. People are understanding us in English. But before we could speak, we all had to learn words. We had to learn letters. We had to learn how to put them together. It's not how it usually goes in the world, right? I mean, let's go slap data together and just see what happens. And then, you know, could you imagine us trying to communicate if we didn't have that foundation? Mm-hmm. Like, how do you do that? So I think now it's kind of coming back. Everybody's taking a step back saying we've invested countless dollars, countless people, countless hours, and we're getting marginal results.
Including on master data management.
Right. So I think on the master data management side, what they were finding is that if you can find how to get everybody to agree is, this is, call it your system of record, or this is what we're going to call it, they were seeing better levels of success. And that dovetails into some of these other things, right? On the A side, it was something that they did kind of try to explain how it all plays together.
Well, I think part of the so what here to give an answer is like, we just need to sit down and say, okay, here's how much money we've spent on all this infrastructure and all this technology. And look how much we have not been spending on, it's called the knowledge management, on the collaborative data engineering thing. It's like, hey, look, we know how much we put in and we know how much we've gotten out of that. We have those numbers. Now let's go shift some things and talk about prototype and experiment. Give us the opportunity to go show, because we believe, I mean, make the hypothesis that if we invest in more on this knowledge management, people side and stuff, we're going to go get increased.
Yeah, get higher return.
And then we can go do that because we have a baseline we can compare to. Like, I think this is the we should try out these, we should do this more.
Yeah,
try to do some ROI analysis.
It is. I think what you're saying though, right, is that you're seeing organizations that they've made the commitment to go on and down these paths, and they're not just ready to throw in the towel. They're saying, we don't think it's so much of the technology didn't work. We just don't think we were ready for it. We think we missed some steps that we should have probably thought through initially, right? Most people.
Is that right? Is that the right way to think about it?
I mean, I haven't gone through it. So, you know, I can tell you what we try to do. But
I was always wondering, sunk cost versus, like, are we falling into a trap, a fallacy, or, you know, sometimes we do need to be patient and just invest and, you know, maybe adjust our approach a little bit, right?
Agreed. I will tell you that it was a very long time ago, probably 15 years ago or so, I was at another conference and a federal agency went up and explained how it was something to the effect of it was their $67 million learning lesson that they figured out after $67 million that were thrown at the problem is that they had it wrong and they have to start over. And how do you have that conversation? You spent $67 million on something. It took you that long to figure it out. We got it wrong. We got to do it again. That's a very difficult conversation to have, right? So I think that you have some organizations where they haven't perhaps spent $67 million, but they're just like, look, we believe that we actually could get this to work if we can kind of go back a little bit and do some things again. And in fact, if you listen to a lot of the case studies, right, when people go to conferences and they want to listen to a customer talk about their scenario in the case studies, what's the one slide everybody is waiting for? The learned lessons. What did you learn? If I could do it again, here's what I would do. Like, that's like the whole value in the whole presentation. It's like, they'll show you all the really cool stuff. But at the end, like the one slide everybody's looking for is like, what did you learn? What did you learn so I don't make that mistake?
Well, I think what's also important, especially when we had this conversation last week too on the podcast, is that we need to also be sharing all the bad stories, which we don't. You go off and we're like, oh, everything is just unicorns and rainbows. Here's all this thing. It just works perfectly. Blah, blah, blah. It's like, actually more interested. Like, we should give all the failure talks. Like, here's what I did and it didn't work and it cost us much. And don't do this. Don't do this, please. Right? I think that's more something. You need to have like an anti-positive failure conference.
I had a term for that in a past life. I used to call this like, look, we need to be comfortable having people tune into the horror channel. These are the horrors of all the deployments of what has gone wrong. And let's try to make your story not be another anecdotal story that we add and talk about. Let's just figure out these are all these people that have already tried this. And in the same breath, there's going to be some folks that are like, this is new and we're going to try it. And as long as you go in eyes wide open, you know, it's like, look, there's a chance you may not get it right on the first path. That's okay. But you know what you're getting into, right? As opposed to being sold or provided a vision or dream of how it can work. And then you slightly disenchanted because it didn't live up to your expectation. So now what do you do?
Yeah. Going back to the master demand theory, I was in one of the talks that, oh, it's not dead. What I found interesting about it is, I think when people say it's dead, it's because they're thinking about just like the old school tools. Mm-hmm. And what was really interesting is that people talk about MDM, and specifically in this talk, there is no speak about like, oh, a vendor product to go do this. It's like, you know, here's a concept about it. And I think everybody will agree, like, no, we should make sure that our most important data about our master data, our customers, like, we need to manage that. I think nobody was going to disagree with that. I do like the notion of keeping it lean.
Right.
So it's like, oh, if we're going to talk about customer data, which are going to master that, you don't need to add all these other attributes to that stuff. You don't need to have the sentiment of the customer. Like, right. No, let's keep the very minimal thing, keep it lean. So that was good. That was one that I liked. And then connecting it back to just, that's just the data product. It's just something else that is, go back to your terms, it's a very highly curated thing that this should be beautiful data people can find and can go use. So at that point, I'm like, yeah, master data is not dead. You can do it in multiple ways, and it's not always you have to go get a vendor, you can figure out your own. So I think that's the balance.
For sure. I mean, I would tell you that the leaner you, at least the leaner you start with your master data effort, you're going to have a higher probability of success, right? So to your point is, I don't need to bring in 12 attributes. I'm going to focus on 5. I'm going to focus on 4, whatever that minimal number is. And then even when you're trying to do those match rules in terms of how that works out, it'll actually show you, are my match rules right? Right. So before you start going down the path, because invariably at some point you will potentially have either a data ingestion problem or a data interpretation problem that might have that attribute throw a value that makes no sense. And now it's like, well, my MDM project is paused because we just can't get these things to match. And so I think it requires some thought when you're going through it. But if you start small, you can get that thing actually moving forward. Now, to your point, don't get so many attributes.
Is that a very common misstep, you would say, in general, that when people tackle these master data management type initiatives, they're thinking too big, too, like, let's pull too much of an ocean here?
I think that people think of the concept of the golden record, and they really like the concept of the golden record, one place where I can get you know, the information that's right. And I think it goes exactly back to what Juan's saying earlier, is like, how many attributes do you need for that record to be golden, right? Is it sufficient for you just for me to be able to say, let's use 4 or 5 attributes, I've got the person, but perhaps even more importantly, I can then create, let's call it like a neural network, if you will, of some kind that just gives you the pointers. If you want more detailed information about that person, just go to that system and pull it, but I'm not going to bring it in because then it throws off all these rules that you're trying to match and you can't.
Mm-hmm. Now, and this goes back to why metadata is so important, because at the end, like, I want to, and you want to have all that cross the social collaborative, because you want to know, is like, for all these different business units, these are the things that they care about the most. And so that's the social part. That's what's in people's minds. We will extract that and then be able to connect it and realize, okay, these are the attributes that we need for these reasons. And you should be able to say, because each of these attributes connect, drive some sort of revenue or whatever, right? And if I don't have this, so that's how we should be able to make that case.
And if you want more detail, you can go to that other system. And you
exactly.
There, right? Yeah, you don't need pointer. To take all 300 attributes and try to master them.
Right? Yeah. Just get the ones that help you match that person. Because throughout the life cycle in most organizations, if you think about it, right, an organization is going to have some kind of marketing or sales platform. Almost everybody has a CRM type platform. Then you'll have your sales platform, whatever that is. So that in and of itself, by definition, depending on where that life cycle is for your customer, could live in all 3 platforms potentially, or a version of them, or they can only be in 1 or 2 platforms until they kind of continue that journey with that particular company. And now they start to expand, and now you're getting more attributes, you're learning more about them, right? I think that it's going to be a very interesting next 2 to 3 years to see how transformative some of the things that people are trying to do really go back to the basics again.
Yeah.
It's like, it's almost circular. Like, you know, a lot of these things is like, hey, that was really new. Now it's not new, but guess what? It's new again. So
what comes around goes around. That's when you know our history. Yeah. And I think the what we're discussing here today and kind of what you've observed in the takeaways of the conference, which has been, AI and the metadata has been the theme of everything. And everybody's mind is right now with AI being able to think about how to chat with their data and stuff like that. All the conversations I had was people, it was very clear to them that we need metadata. We need that context. If we want to be able to accomplish that vision of to chat with our data, especially when it's like with the structured data, it was clear to them that metadata and context needed. I did not have to have any conversation with anybody trying to convince them that metadata was important for that. So that is a level of, I don't know, maturity or people are now connecting the dots and like, okay, that, like, I know what that future looks like. I can see that. And I need that foundation. So that makes you feel comfortable.
I did have some conversations though over this conference where the impact of AI was a little bit not fully understood by folks. Cause I did have quite a few conversations where people were like, oh, I'm really hoping that AI is just going to solve quality, or it's just going to solve stewardship.
Well, that'd be great. Let me know when it happens.
Right. And so, I mean, obviously I think there's going to be a really positive impact around that, but I was a little worried because, so there are some people who I think fully understand and appreciate that AI is more of a co-pilot and it's going to help. It's going to be an accelerator. And it's also kind of earlier in our conversation where we talked about how it's also going to be a great lens back onto how is the quality of our data, how curated is the data, and force us back to do that right foundation. But I think there is a little bit of confusion still by folks who are hoping it will be that magic bullet.
But the interesting thing about that, if you think about that, is even in ChatGPT, it says, please double check the answers we're giving you.
Yeah.
And ChatGPT is arguably perhaps with the strongest, most popular AI platform out there right now. Mm-hmm. So even they say that, right?
Yeah.
And I think, Juan, the you use a very specific term a little earlier, and I think that's really important, is the context of what that data actually means in the use. Because from company to company, it's going to change, right? Within your company, even among different areas, you could have that context problem. And I think that the ability to have the understanding of what your synonyms need to be like for a term, to allow everybody to understand, hey, this is what that means, I think that's going to be pivotal. Even more so, again, if people are going to start leaning on AI is going to need to know, okay, how, those 4 things could mean this one thing.
All right, time flies. Time flies. We could keep talking about this stuff. But we need to go to our next segment, which is our lightning round questions.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to go first. We talked about data literacy being important, and I think what about metadata literacy? Right? Does everyone in the enterprise need to be metadata literate, or is that just goes over people's head?
I think it does go over people's head. I think a good drinking game is if they could say it.
So,
yeah, I think that would be a great game. Then you qualify to go ahead and participate. But I think, again, you have to be selective as to who you kind of engage into that process. Similar to don't boil the ocean. Like, you work in a 10,000 employee company, you don't need all 10,000 in. Let's get 5 or 10. And then from there, let them kind of choose who are the best ambassadors. And kind of like the old commercials, and I may be dating myself, is like, I know two friends and you know two friends and they know two friends, and something to that effect. And then just figure out how you build that. I agree. I don't think you can get everybody involved. And for them, there probably won't be as much value as there would be for someone else.
Yeah. Don't try to boil the ocean in terms with people. Of getting everybody to fully understand what we may know on the data team side. Right. All right. Second question here. So one thing that's been coming up a lot recently is the topic of AI governance. Is AI governance a unique discipline, or do you just see that it's just part of data governance?
I personally see it different, only because there are so many additional things that an organization can choose to do with AI in terms of what they're allowing that platform to do, right? So in a traditional governance scenario, I typically only have to worry about things that I have within the walls, right? And how we go ahead and transmit things out, what needs to be encrypted. With AI, you introduce the capability of potentially the true LLM. Now, how much of my data is going out? How does that work? And more importantly, is it introducing a bias that we did not anticipate? Because that wouldn't fall under the traditional governance the way people have done it for the past couple of years, because they haven't had to think like that.
Yeah.
Okay. So now you've got a new spin on it. And I think it's a very strong possibility it could emerge into its own discipline. Mm-hmm. I've been asked to get engaged from the organization perspective, but I also think that as that matures, I could see how it could evolve to its own.
Yeah, okay, that makes a lot of sense.
All right, next question. AI, right? The only session is about it. Did you come away from the conference feeling that they're teaching practical next steps around it?
Practical. So like in order to be able to go back and do it.
Yeah.
The sessions I sat in on, not so much. Right.
So still high level, blah, blah, blah.
I would even say a little blah, 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 but they were trying to kind of bring it down to here are what some people are doing. Right. And here are ways to kind of go about it. I would also say that there's potentially other conferences that are hyper-focused on AI, where Gartner has to kind of touch everything. Right, because this is a data and analytics summit, so they have to focus on a little bit of everything. I think that if that's a space that you're really interested in, you're probably looking for a conference that's super hyper focused.
You need to find a conference or content that's going to let you go to that deeper level.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, last question here. So we talked a little bit about master data management today. Do too many companies buy for master data management when they should actually build?
So.
I know you've had an interesting journey around this, right?
So from my background, having done it, I can tell you that, look, ultimately, if the MDM solution that's on the shelf addresses your problems and it gets what you need, perfect. But if you have unique scenarios or you need a particular, let's call it frequency of innovation, because you have unique things that take place in your landscape, you probably should build it. Now, part of that is you will have to use other tools in order to make that happen, but it can be built, it can work. And some companies will sit there and say, it's like, yeah, we built it homegrown and it's going to be quite some time before we consider anything that comes off the shelf because it works. It doesn't need to be pretty, it just needs to work, right? Because the reality is that for most folks, like, they don't need the pretty GUI. Some places want it, others don't. And if you don't need the pretty GUI, then I just need something that works.
Yeah.
All right. Tim, takeaways of the takeaways.
Takeaways of takeaways. We started off with talking about the Gartner conference, right? And what are the big themes that you've been seeing, Chris? You gave a talk as well, which was awesome. And the biggest themes that you mentioned were, okay, there's been a lot around AI. There's been a lot around data mesh. There's been a lot around, you know, all sorts of different analytics and governance topics, but the one common thread that tied everything together is metadata, metadata and metadata management. And you will struggle essentially without good metadata management, good governance to then be able to do all the things that you want to do around data mesh, around AI. The common thread is really understanding and managing that metadata, understanding what the data is. You mentioned data literacy. And when it comes to AI, you can really use the metadata to actually learn about and understand your data better. You mentioned, like, why are we failing at this cool thing? It's because you haven't done the foundation. And that was a key thing. And I think a theme throughout our entire chat was around, hey, like, this whole focus around AI and some more of these advanced use cases, it's all going to drive back to the foundations again. And maybe that's a really good thing. It's going to really let us remind ourselves that, hey, the stuff that we've been talking about for 30 plus years here of, like, what is good data management and good data governance? It's the same, and we have to put more focus on it. You also talked quite a bit around around partnership and how you have to partner with the business. Juan mentioned about social data engineering. You kind of called it, you know, partnering with the business, whatever you call it, right? Connecting to the folks in the business who are your stakeholders. You mentioned start small and kind of build up from there. Don't blow the ocean. Pick things that make sense. Start with an important dashboard or an important report and use that as your basis to start building the circle from there. Prototype and experiment. So I think it was great to hear the focus around metadata, the focus around partnership. Juan, what about you? What were your takeaways?
I think metadata is really going back to the foundations, right? So I think you brought it up, like, hey, we 10, 15 years ago, we talked about knowledge management and then people didn't take it seriously. And maybe it's now it's time to go do that. I think connects to this whole theme of social data engineering, collaborative data engineering. I like what you said, like, you tell the story. Well, we found out that this report is wrong because there's this join is wrong. So what do we do, right? And this conversation we had about the politics of knowledge, like, these are the types of things that we need to go figure out. Like, how do we deal with the situations and play it out, right? And if it's wrong, so what, right? It's directionally correct, so what? I mean, these are the things that we need to go figure out and then see if it's actually a big problem that we need to go deal with or not.
Yeah.
Interesting to learn that the data mesh and data fabric still is a very strong topic. Standing room only in a 700 person room. Again, start focus on experimenting, iterating. Don't have to boil the ocean. You can be incremental about it. The concerns that people are having here are you going to divide the data teams, or you just need more resources in your central team, right? Are you going to create some federated IT kind of infrastructure? And how does this whole social construct work? So what is the incurred cost for efficiency? So this is really important. Like, you know what your costs are, X, and then you should go figure out what the ROI of that is and see if it was worth it or not. This is really important to go do, and otherwise you'll be spending, what, $67 million on something. So
for learning.
Yeah, learning. So, and then talk about MDM, Master Data Management, the build versus buy. Again, metadata continues to be a big theme around that. There's been a lot of investment, but has there been a strong return on that investment? So I guess we really need to go do more of this, understand the cost, and be able to figure out what has that return been. Start lean, right? Higher probability of success. The concept of a golden record is great, but how many attributes does it need to be for it to be golden? That is a great question. You need to go figure out. And how do we figure that out? Talking to people and these attributes and stuff. This is all metadata. What you learn from talking to people, all that should be connected by itself. We should be comfortable watching the horror channel. I love that. That's a great thing. That's a t-shirt right there. We need to be able to go learn about all the failures, and we need to have more of those conversations. At the end of the day, I think the theme we know is metadata. And I think, but also metadata is not just a technical metadata. There's like that people, social metadata kind of put it all together. And I think it's very clear that people are realizing we need to go back to the foundations. That's the context. And that's the only way how AI is going to work. AI requires discipline. Discipline data like that. Discipline. All right. How did we do?
It was great. It was fun. I can't believe, you know, how long it's been. What, an hour? That's crazy.
When we took our notes. All right. Wrap us up. Three questions. What's your advice? Who should we invite next? And what resources do you follow?
Okay. So for the first one, what's next for me is, you know, being able to go back at least internally and just identify the saying, hey, look, the practices that we're doing for metadata management, they're good, but we probably need to put more focus on it, because as the organization is working on other initiatives, we were already kind of put to the forefront just because of what we're doing in terms of some of the initiatives internally. So I think this really kind of just galvanized that thought. It's just like, look, even after they finish this, that next step that's on the horizon, like, this needs to be ready for them at that point. So for me, it kind of really helped enforce that. Who's next? I would tell you, and I want to make sure I pronounce his name correctly, but Etisham Zayid.
Etisham.
So Etisham was, again, we could argue it's like, hey, I'm a bit biased, and maybe that's why I heard so much about Medidata. But the reality is, it was in the opening keynote. Like, I don't get to pick the opening keynote. The opening keynote is the opening keynote, and he hits it right out of the gate, right? And then he also did the data fabric with data mesh. He really went into a lot of these disciplines and AI. Like, he went into all of those areas that we covered here, which is interesting. It's like, okay, so let's hear it from his perspective, because he probably covered this from his view.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it would be, I think that would be an interesting chat.
That would be really cool. Yeah.
And then for resources in terms of what I do, you know, I shared with you that for me, I don't tend to frequent the same conference year over year. That's not something I tend to do. I kind of pick what's the conference that gives me a different spin or a different view. If, for example, kind of like I was saying earlier, if there was a much stronger appetite for us to have to understand AI, I would probably go focus and identify a conference. Doesn't have to be large, but what you're really trying to do is you're trying to get with other peers. It's like, what are you guys doing? So even a conference of 500 people, you could come away with value if you're willing to engage in a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to be passive about it, then I think your return on those events are much lower than you probably want.
That's very wise.
Yeah.
A lot of people tend to go to like, you know, same conferences. Maybe it's Gartner, right? Like, but if you really want to learn, you need to expose yourself to different content, deeper content,
yep,
and different people.
Yep.
Be willing to engage in a conversation. Right?
I think that's the key, honestly. Like, if, you know, to go to a conference and just not have a conversation, just sit in every session, but never ask a question, never go to a booth, never talk to a peer, never take the time while you're at lunch or breakfast or dinner to talk to somebody. It's just, you know, you could have paid for the streaming and just stay home.
Yeah,
that's true. I really like that. This is a really, that's great advice to be able to say, go pick your theme they want to go learn, because what you were telling me before too, is like, if you come again to this conference next year, it's going to be the same type of, there's not a big change that's happening,
right.
So go do that. I mean, hey, we met at the conference about Kafka and streaming.
Yeah. So, and that was completely off. I mean, it was a purely focused Kafka conference. And that's where I bumped into Juan, and he was like, "What are you doing here?" I was like, "Oh, just trying to figure out a little bit more. We're going into this space, and I want to get more educated." But in that entire time, I had shared with Juan, I didn't sit in on many sessions. Right, it was a 3-day conference. I think I sat in a total of 4 sessions. I spent my time on the floor, just talking to all the vendors. Tell me what you're seeing. What are you doing? Why do you think your product's good? Interesting responses when you ask that, you know. Again, just put them, you know, on that, I guess, uncomfortable playing field, and just say, okay, learn about it. Have the willingness to learn.
This is great advice. Well, next week we have Scott Taylor, the Data Whisperer. That's going to be he's such an awesome guy, and looking forward to that session, that podcast episode. With that, Chris, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for being a guest. This was a lot of fun.
And as always, thanks to Data World, who lets us do this every week.
Yeah.
It's so fun. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Thank you, guys.
Everyone.